Blog Talk Radio.
Show. My name is Ed Molina. My partner in crime, as usual, Fuzzy Biscuits. Happy New Year, though. Man, 2020 sure had us pretty much kicking us in the nuts before exiting. Rest in power, Brody Lee. We'll get to that in a second. Rest in power, MF Doom. That one kind of caught me off guard last minute in 2020. My introduction to MF Doom was Zev Love X. KMD, third base, the gas face. I don't know how many. I'm sure the old school heads remember the gas face, but MF Doom meant a lot more to the culture. And I'll let you explain it, since you know you could better explain the importance of lyricism in hip hop, having done what you've done and your many adventures and trying to get signed and whatnot. So I feel like I'll let you explain it. Like, you know, just this. I'm still kind of at a loss with this whole MF Doom thing, but so. Fuzz, the floor is yours on this one.
Well, long live Doom. Like you said, he was first introduced as Zev Love X of the group KMD, which was him. And there was another rapper. And his little brother was the DJ, DJ Sub Rock. And mm-hmm. they came in with, like, they were introduced by third base. Mm-hmm. So right before the second album was released, his brother was hit by a car and killed, and the cover was very controversial, so it got shelved.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Black Bastards, and it got released, like, I think in 2000 eventually, and it was very, like, critically acclaimed. So then, you know, he disappeared for a while. At one point, he was in England. He was born in London, but always claimed, like, you know, American, never had American citizenship. So there was one point where he was, like, I think he couldn't get into America, and he was living in London. But anyway, he started producing and rapping. And for his rapping, he didn't want people to judge him for anything else other than his music. So he, you know, put on his metal face. And, you know, Dr. Mm-hmm. Doom was, like, his favorite villain. And he felt scorned by the music industry from KMD. So that's why, like, he also, like, kept playing up to this villain thing, because he felt like it was him against the industry.
Mad
and
villain.
A lot of people liked that narrative, you know. So he had a strong following. You know, and he collaborated with everybody, you know. Mad Villain is, like,
I love
his most known work, and that's, like, a collaboration with him and Madlib. But mm-hmm. yeah, Doom was just a guy that, like, he had his following. Excuse me, he had his following, but, you know, he was never big mainstream. And again, a lot of people like that too. And he was just, you know, if you're not familiar with his body of work, check it out. Highly skilled, one of the best. This means a lot. He was Mos Def's favorite rapper. And hip hop, just, they lost a big one. That's pretty much sums it up.
What it, to me, you know, with my hashtag everything is wrestling, what I loved about him is he blurred the line between reality and kayfabe. Like, a friend of mine, I'm stealing this from a good friend of mine, Mike Scalise, who's a huge fan. This one hit him hard. You know, he kind of compared him to Andy Kaufman, where he blurred the lines. I don't know if anyone remembers in the wrestling history, his feud with Andy Lawler. Comedian Andy Kaufman had a feud with Jerry Lawler, and he blurred those lines of kayfabe and reality even back then. In a lot of ways, MF Doom was that. He wanted the art to speak for itself. What it was,
yeah,
what I look like,
and one
everything.
Thing, like, in blurring the lines, Doom one thing that's funny to mention about him is he would send imposters to do his concerts. So it would just be like regular dudes with like the mask, because he never really got, you know, he never really was seen in public without the mask.
Right.
Like one time it was Hannibal Buress.
Say word.
Hannibal Buress got like booed off stage. Yeah, so like that was one thing that like people thought was funny, but also, you know, if you were at a concert sometimes
you'd
be mad.
Yeah, if I paid for that concert. Although I would see, listen, you know what you're getting out of, you know, MF Doom. There's a good possibility you pay that ticket, you're going to get a Doom bot, and you're not going to get, you know, you're going to get Hannibal Buress under that mask and not MF Doom. So you know the risk. I'm not trying to be an asshole, but that's, if you're a fan of him and his art, that was a possibility in all of this. So, rest in power, MF Doom. And, of course, Brody Lee, a.k.a. Luke Harper. You know I'm a huge fan of the Wyatts. This one killed me. But what's incredible about this is how many lives he touched across the industry, regardless of company, whether it was WWE, AEW, Combat Zone Wrestling, Pro Guerrilla Wrestling. It didn't matter. And a business full of carny, like, characters and scumbags and whatnot. We've seen what happened with the Me Too movement here in wrestling this year, 2020. It's amazing how universally loved he was across the board by everyone. Like, just universally beloved. It reminded me a lot when Dimebag Darrell got shot in the head. No one could find, like, it's almost like you have to research a bad thing that somebody said about Brody Lee, because he was just, from all accounts, from people I know that work in the industry that dealt with him, like, he just seemed like a genuinely just nice guy, a family guy, you know what I mean? Like a real locker room presence. So, ooh, excuse me. That's the Magners there kicking in. Magners, I went with the pair today. So, but rest in power, Brody Lee, Luke Harper. The AEW show was a tearjerker. I wasn't crying. That was just dust in my eye. It was, yeah, man, this week sucked, but let's focus. Let's head into this. Any words on Brody Lee? Sorry, before we get into match of the year, hand out the fuzzies.
I mean, I think it's what you said. Like, the number one thing I ever heard about Brody Lee as far as, like, behind the scenes was that, like, you know, you hear a lot of rumors, innuendo. For him, like, what you heard about him was how much everybody loved him and how good he was backstage. And then watching the tribute really, really drove it home. You know, so it yeah. Just, you know, I'm those were sub tears that I shed, you know. I'm a G. But it was the tribute show was really good, I thought. And what they did
for
his
son,
I thought was amazing.
Yeah, on the business side, I'm glad they did that. Like, they're taking care of the family. So I'm really, you know, again, this is a business sometimes full of scumbags. It's just, that's just it. It's a very carny-like business. And I'm glad to see Tony Khan taking care of the family. But let's get into something more positive. You know, rest in power, MF Doom and Brody Lee. Let's get into match of the year. Let's kick it off. I'll let you start it off. What was your 2020 match of the year this year?
It involves one of the runner-ups for my ones to watch. And this guy that I told you about, I think, last year that I like, that I'm
mm-hmm.
hoping goes beyond the shadows of NXT UK, is my man Ilya Dragunov against Walter.
Okay. NXT take over Blackpool. Okay.
No,
right.
It was a regular
that was what helped.
NXT show.
Oh,
it
was it regular,
regular
NXT,
NXT
show?
NXT UK show, yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't a pay-per-view, and it was one of the most brutal matches that I've seen in years. And Ilya Dragunov, I don't know if in today's wrestling you can find somebody who sells a match as well as Ilya Dragunov. I was watching that with one of my friends who's a wrestling fan, like a diehard one, but lately like casual. And he like
mm-hmm.
literally like was worried about Dragunov watching the match. He was like, yo, he's hurt for real. Like, Dragunov sold. Like, not taking anything away from Walter, because he's the ring general. And he made it, you know, he was right there dancing with him. So, big ups to Walter. But the thing about this match was the brutality, and just the brutality was sold by both of them, specifically the victim of most of it, Dragunov. And you know, I just can't think of a match similar. I was going to go with the ladder match from NXT with Bronson Reed, Damian Priest, Gargano, and Dream. And I think it was somebody else.
Right.
Anyway, but I was like, you know what? This is a wrestling match, and I'm going to go traditional. What it is. I know you just watched the match. I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Yes. So the big holdup in doing the fuzzies earlier was that I kept hearing about this match of the year. And here I am talking about some of the AAA stuff in this year that Kenny Omega did. And I'm like, that's the one match I felt I hadn't seen. So I didn't feel fair in evaluating the year without watching that match. And holy shit, if anyone were to ask me, Ed, hey, what's the definition of strong style wrestling? Show him this match. Dragunov's chest was redder than the Soviet Union flag. It was just laced up. The back of his neck was all laced up. But you were talking about Dragunov selling that last, the end of the match when he chokes him out, and he looks like he's bleeding from his mouth. I can't tell. I thought it looked like he was bleeding his mouth. Man, was he selling that choke out. Man, was he selling just that defeat and the cost of that war against Walter. I understand why that's on everyone's list. My runner-up was actually, after watching this, my runner-up this year was Sasha and Bayley, Hell in a Cell. I think Hell in a Cell, just on the basis that I think, you know, I used to love Hell in a Cell. I think, you know, Seth and Bray Wyatt kind of ruined it for me last year. But this year, Sasha and Bayley showed how fun Hell in a Cell matches can be, how physical they can be without having to be all gimmicky, without having to try to replicate what Mick Foley did. For my match of the year, and man, it was a great year in matches. There were a lot, but I'm going to go with FTR versus the Young Bucks at Full Gear. And I'll tell you why. There was Okada versus Naito. There was Ospreay versus Time Bomb, Moxley versus Suzuki. But really, the reason I loved FTR versus the Young Bucks is because it reignited my love for tag team wrestling. I grew up a huge tag team wrestling fan. I'm talking whether it's the British Bulldogs, Fabulous Freebirds, Road Warriors, Demolition. I used to love tag team wrestling. Part of the reason I hate Shawn Michaels is because I hated the Rockers. Like, I still hate the Rockers to this day. They were like the Fugazi Rock and Roll Express. And that's what I loved about the match between the Young Bucks and FTR. It was an homage to the beauty of tag team wrestling. There were so many hidden eggs throughout that match. You know, them doing the Steiner Brothers finisher, them doing the Heart Attack, which is the Heart Foundation's finisher. They did DIY's finisher at one point. FTR did DIY's finisher as an homage to their wars with Gargano and Ciampa. I think if I remember correctly, the Young Bucks did the Golden Lovers finisher, the Golden Trigger, if I'm not mistaken. And so it was, to me, that match. You know, I always say, I want you to tell me a story in the ring. That was a love letter to tag team wrestling. And it showed me again how much fun tag team wrestling can be. And I think, and maybe I'm doing this more out of emotion than what happened, than the actual science in the ring, but you know, the actual match in the ring, which is an excellent match. I don't care what anybody says. It really was. But I'm going with FTR and the Young Bucks for match of the year at Full Gear. And again, it was tough considering everything that happened with COVID and empty arenas. You know, I think people forgot. Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens threw a banger at WrestleMania with him jumping off that shit. Like, you know what I mean? There were a lot of good matches. We talked off the air about Finn Balor and O'Reilly, and then there was Finn Balor and Cole. So, but I'm gonna go with FTR versus the Bucks on this one, which kind of leads me to Tag Team of the Year, and I think we both agree with this. I'm going with the Young Bucks, and I believe you are too. Am I mistaken in that, or?
I'm going with the Bucks.
What's your reasoning behind the Bucks?
All right. I'm going to say what's my main reason, because, I mean, there's so many reasons. My main reason is basically, like, you could say resume. Like, looking at back at, like, if you look back, like, they carried AEW tag team. Like, they maintained relevancy, whether they were in a title run or not, and had great matches, you know, even off the break. Like, they pretty much put over Private Party and had great matches against them, great matches against FTR. I mean, if you just look back at the year, they wrestled everybody, and they're memorable matches. They weren't all classics, but they're memorable, because when you look back, you're like, oh, I do remember that match, and that's what the Bucks did this year.
So it's funny, we were talking off the grid when we were starting to prep for the show, and we both agree, this is the one we both agree on, the Young Bucks for Tag Team of the Year. You know, we'd mentioned their matches against, Chuck E. T. and Best Friends. We talked about their match against Butcher and the Blade. We talked that triple threat that they had with Butcher and the Blade, and actually, I believe it was Best Friends, their match against Private Party. They're also match of the year candidate against for the title against Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. But you know what friend of the show Bonnie almost slapped me in the face for? She's like, son, how do you forget Young Bucks versus the Lucha Brothers?
Oh yeah.
So I think in the deepest tag team division in the business, they stood out. They shined. I know they get a bad reputation for being spot monkeys. I think there's some valid criticism of them being spot monkeys. But again, I just think that they, like you said, they carried the deepest division, and it carried it far, to me, to the point that they were match of the year. I will say honorable mention for me, man, I wish Dangerous Techers, the team of Tai Chi and Zack Sabre Jr. fought more with the Gorillas of Destiny. It's a tie for me for my runner-up between Street Profits and the North. I think the North in the ring are one of the best tag teams in the business, Josh Alexander and Ethan Eagle Page. And Street Profits just, they dominated the WWE scene this year. They just did. I think I have my issues with the tag team division in WWE, but they were definitely the cream of the crop this year, right? Without a doubt.
My runner-up.
You know, some people may.
Street Profits.
Some people might feel they got hoes this year, but again, I just think that the depth that AEW has in the tag team division is so much greater than what's going on in Impact, and so much better than what's going on in WWE. And I had to give it to the Bucks on this one. But, yeah, so let's go into – man, we're moving through these quick. I think it's the cider. Women's Wrestler of the Year. Women's Wrestler of the Year. I'll let you go first. Who is your Women's Wrestler of the Year?
To me, this one through most of the year was like neck and neck. But to me, the end of the year, one of them – took the lead, and it's my girl Sasha Banks. I think you were just talking about Hell in a Cell, her having a possible match of the year with Bayley. I think that match solidified her as queen of the cage. Like, there's nobody in WWE that can lay claim to being like a Hell in a Cell or steel cage match like wrestler like Sasha Banks in the WWE. That's her. Like, she grabbed that this year. Like, you know, look at her match with, like, Becky Lynch. Like, I mean, Sasha does it. And she did it in Hell of a Cell. That whole, all of the gold, like, her and Bayley tag team champs again. Like, that shit was incredible. Like, I love that shit. Like, I was so mad. It was inevitable they were going to, you know, break up again. But I was so mad because it was so good. And that's where they were running neck and neck. But then, like, Sasha ended the year with the belt. Sasha won that big match. And I think Sasha just, I don't know. I think she finished stronger than Bayley. But I think one of the things I think of this year was Sasha Banks, like, being like, damn, she just did it again in Hell in a Cell or a steel cage. Like, you know, I don't think anybody could dispute that there's any woman on the WWE roster that puts on a match in a cage like Sasha Banks. And possibly, like, I mean, I don't know. I may be going too far, but I can't think of a woman in history, maybe.
Okay.
I think this may have become her lane, and she put her foot down in it and was like, this is my spot right here. And, you know, and having all the gold and, you know, being great on the mic, doing good promos with Bayley, you know, I think Sasha had herself a year.
It's funny. I'm going to go with Bayley Dose Straps. I'm going to go with Bayley. And the reason my tiebreak, you're right about going neck to neck. To be frank, those two were probably the best two performers in WWE the entire year, to be quite frank. They were the most interesting thing about WWE's quote-unquote main roster all year. The reason I give it to Dose Straps is holding the tag team titles as well as the women's title and defending the title. You know how they say in boxing, MMA, and wrestling, the belt don't make the champ make the belt. Something, you know what I mean? Like, it's the person carrying that strap that gives that belt gravitas. And that's the thing. And you saw that when Sasha and Bayley were carrying the tag team belts, there was a sense of importance that unfortunately, and that's on the bookers. I do blame the bookers that, Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax didn't have that same gravitas. I think also because it was Sasha and Bayley, they were allowed to defend the title all over the brands. And I thought that was cool. Awesome. That's the way it's supposed to be with that title. But the fact that she was defending both belts all over the place, I got to give it to Bayley. I think Bayley solidified herself as one of the greatest of all time. That's to be debated because I know some people say Becky Lynch, some people say Charlotte. You would probably argue Sasha, especially Queen of the Cage, as you're calling her now. But I think Bayley had such a strong beginning of the year. And to be honest, her late end of the year, her late run isn't bad. They have her feuding with Bianca Belair and helping. You know, people were complaining, when are they going to push Bianca? When are they going to push Bianca? Well, how about this? How about putting her in a program with Bayley? You know, she's helping put Bianca over in that sense. And so I got to go. I'm going to go with Bayley. Honorable mention is your winner, Sasha. My other honorable mention is, Deonna Purrazzo, the Impact champion, knockout champion out in Impact. I think if you get a chance, watch Jordynne Grace versus Deonna Purrazzo. And I want to say Slammiversary. I think that's the pay-per-view. But check out that match where she wins the title. Great. I love her Fujiwara armbar. She's great on the mic. WWE NXT fumbled the ball on Purrazzo. They should have never. Well, I'm glad they let her go because they gave her an opportunity to shine. That would be the problem again. I think with the same thing is Impact's depth compared to WWE's depth is very different. Although Impact's depth to AEW's depth is night and day also. So it's not that Impact has a weaker division. Just right now, Sasha and Bayley are running on all cylinders. I had Io Shirai there for a while, especially with her match. She had that triple threat against Charlotte and Rhea Ripley, and then beat Rhea Ripley clean again. Had that great performance at War Games, but yeah, I'm gonna go just Bayley Dose Straps, man. I'm going with her for Women's Wrestler of the Year, which leads us to we're moving through this quick. Men's Wrestler of the Year. We had interesting discussions on this one. I'm gonna let you go first on this one.
All right. Mine, I'll just go ahead and say it's Kenny the Cleaner.
Okay.
Part of it, I say Kenny the Cleaner, because he pretty much ended the year as Kenny the Cleaner. I mean, he brought it back at the end of the year. I mean, But you look at, I mean, even not even consider end of the year. We could go to the beginning of the year. Tag team champions. Again, had great matches. The match against the Young Bucks, possible match of the year candidate. You know, I thought he grabbed back his relevance in a big way when the heel turn started. And, you know, like him and the Bucks were like kind of at odds, but not really, you know, similar throwback to like New Japan. And, ended the year being the guy that beat Moxley. And then just to be classic professional wrestling, him and, God damn it, dude from Impact, what's his name?
Rich Swann? Or Don Callis?
No, the dude that is Callis. Like,
yeah, his manager,
classic
Don
professional
Callis.
Wrestling, classic professional wrestling promos, the way he beat Moxley, classic. Just the promos that he cut in the bus at Impact was, I thought, great. Just, I mean, to me, like, just grabbed my attention at the end of the year. Like, look, I've been doing this, but now I'm really going to show you at the end of the year. Like, in the ring and out of the ring. Like, backing it up with great matches. You know, you can't say Omega threw a bad match. Even remember when he started, he hinted at the heel turn against Luchasaurus, Jungle Boy, and Marco Stunt. You know, those were some great matches. And just, I mean, just being able to do it on the mic. I can't think, you know, other than Inner Circle and Le Champion, I'm not sure if I can think anybody in AEW that kind of like had promos on the level of what he ended the year on with Callis.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm a big mic guy, but like he's a throwback. Like him and Callis is some classic pro wrestling shit. And, you know, bringing back Kenny the Cleaner, you know, good night, goodbye, bang. I love it. Like, you know, if you've been watching Kenny Omega, it's incredible, incredible throwback. But if you're being introduced to Kenny Omega, what an introduction. Like, how many wrestlers could you say have done it on that level this year? I can't think of anybody. So I give my male wrestler of the year to Mr. Kenny Omega.
I was there with Kenny Omega, meaning I first of all, I want to say I've been waiting for this Kenny Omega, the Best Bout Machine. That's, I think, which was one of the greatest nicknames, by the way, for a wrestler, Best Bout Machine. I've been waiting for this Omega, the one that fought Okada 4 times in those 7-star classics, whatever you want to call them, whatever Meltzer stars I want to give him. And I'll give it to add to his resume. He's the AAA Mega Champion, Omega Champion, as he calls himself. But he's the Mega Champion, had a match of the year candidate against Rey Fénix in Mexico earlier this year. He had a potential match of the year against Hangman Adam Page this year. I'll give you that. You know, dominated, helped dominate the tag team scene in AEW. You know, had an insane match, which I almost made match of the year. I had to step back, get away from latest and greatest syndrome. I had to get away from that because of his match with Loretto Kid in Triple-Mania this year. Insane match. If you get a chance, go watch it. But I gotta go with Mox on this one, Wrestler of the Year. I think he had an insane year. I hate saying it, but I kind of take a little bit of points away from Omega because of the tag team stuff. I shouldn't say that. That's not fair. But I just think that Mox is, again, you talked about resume. Let me talk to you about Mox's resume. IWGP U.S. champion, AEW champion for most of the year, the face of the company, no matter what people say. I know people talk about Le Champion, but face of the company for most of the year. And I understand his promos aren't your cup of tea, but he's not as bad. But let me look, I'm just going to mention some of his matches this year. Wrestle Kingdom, Texas Deathmatch against Lance Archer. Then later, and then that next night, Wrestle Kingdom against Juice Robinson. Had a great match against Christopher Daniels on the Jericho's boat trip. Had a great match of the year candidate with Minoru Suzuki at New Beginnings in Osaka. Where is it? Had a great match with Brody Lee. I think people forget that. You know, Brody Lee, they pushed him right away to be, you know, to the world title. And I thought he had a great hardcore match with Brody Lee. He had a great – I thought he had a good match against Brian Cage. I know some people didn't like the end. Great match against MJF. Great match against Eddie Kingston. You know, another match against – another no disqualification match against – what?
I thought a great match against Omega.
Yes, great match against Omega. The only bad match he had this year was against Jack Swagger, Jake Hager. And that's, I guess, I just don't find Jake Hager to be very good in the ring. He's not my cup of tea. But and maybe Kenny picked up more belts along the way. I'll give you that, having the Omega title, winning the tag team titles, winning, you know, the AEW belt. But I just think, and it's unfair, I think, to you that you didn't get to see a lot of his work in Japan this year due to the COVID pandemic. I just think Mox had such a strong year. I think he's out of the shadow of Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. I think that was a big deal. Everyone always saw him as the runt of the litter compared to those two. Obviously, Roman Reigns comes from royalty. Seth Rollins is the architect, is one of the best wrestlers in the last 10 years. I'm sure some people will disagree. Yeah, he's a dweeb, but I think no one can argue Seth Rollins is one of the best wrestlers in the last 10 years. And I think Mox stepping out of that shadow and becoming a main event player. Like, I'm hoping, I'm going to stay up late to watch Wrestle Kingdom in a couple of days, hoping that Mox just shocks the world and shows up in Tokyo at the Tokyo Dome and defends his title against Kenta, which I think is going to be an insane match, potential match of the year next year. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking of me missing New Japan and it not being fair, on a little side note, I just found out that I have the New Japan app on my Fire Stick, so I might be needing that password. All right, back to you.
All right. So I will lend you that password, absolutely. You will get to watch, even if it's on delay, you will get to watch Wrestle Kingdom. By the way, side note, what an insane week coming up next week. Monday, you have Wrestle Kingdom Day 1. You have WWE Raw Legends. Then on Tuesday, you have Wrestle Kingdom Night 2. I don't know if Impact's doing anything to kick off the year, but Jesus Christ, on Wednesday, headlining fucking Kenny Omega versus Rey Fenix. A rematch of the spectacular match earlier in Mexico this year. And that's your boy. Everyone, listen, everyone's, you've been saying for a long time, y'all, people are sleeping on Rey Fenix.
That's my guy right there.
So, yeah. So, I think it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be a good week. I'm going to be exhausted next week, but we'll try to do a show to recap all of that. I'm going to go with my honorable mention, actually, is Kenny Omega. But I'm going to throw Drew McIntyre in there. You know,
that was
obviously, That was your what?
That was one of my runner-ups, him and Roman. I think Roman deserves it.
Wow,
Roman.
Okay, see, I don't have Roman Reigns as my honorable mention because I felt
Roman
like he missed. How
much did I dislike Roman Reigns before the heel turn?
You disliked, past tense, you disliked Roman Reigns intensely.
I like
past
Roman
tense.
I like Roman Reigns now. That's a huge turnaround. And I think
that's
a lot of people are like me. I think there were a lot of people who never got with Roman Reigns, but with the heel turn, we're like, okay. So I would mention Roman Reigns right there with Drew McIntyre.
I have Drew McIntyre over Roman Reigns. Go ahead.
I mean, I think they both deserve it. I think WWE finished the year with their two guys that they want to push. I think Reigns and McIntyre are their two guys. And I think they equally
agree
have two guys right now rather than one of the belts outshining the other.
Which, to your point, their match at Survivor Series was fucking awesome. And I'm glad they switched it from Orton and Roman Reigns to Drew McIntyre. I agree with you. WWE has set themselves up in a position where they have two champions that they're very happy with, that they feel that they can push kind of equally with Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre. And it helps that one's a solid face, which WWE gets a lot of deserved criticism for not being able to build faces, and Roman Reigns. I can't put Roman Reigns in my honorable mentions, and that's not a knock on him. I'm not trying to use his medical issues against him, but he was gone for most of the year. And maybe had he – I don't blame him. I don't want to criticize. I'm not trying to come up with him, criticize him for not coming to work. He's got to take care of himself. I very much defended Roman Reigns' decision to not be in the ring until things settled down and people knew more about what was going on with this disease, considering he's high risk. But he hasn't been in the ring as long as Drew McIntyre, and Drew McIntyre was consistent all year. And that's why I have him as my runner-up over Roman Reigns and have him next to Omega. I don't think Drew gets enough respect as champion, I feel like. I feel like part of that is because there's no crowd. And I'm curious what the crowd reaction is to Drew McIntyre, because WWE fans, the WWE universe, they're very fickle about who their quote-unquote faces are. And so I'm assuming people are behind Drew McIntyre. It's all it is, an assumption. But I do like the push that they're using, his face push that they're using for him. I agree with you. I think WWE is in a good place going into the Royal Rumble with the two champions that they want and the two champions that they need. So, but I have as my runner-ups Drew McIntyre and Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega, you're right, had in the same year. I just think Mox coming out of that shadow was so key for him and proved why, you know, AEW pushed him right away as a main event star, you know. So we got a little bit of time left. Let me see how many minutes we got left. We got about where's my clock? We got about 7 minutes. Who are you looking out for in 2021 to break out? Who is the star that you're looking out for? You're like, this is the next big thing going into 2021.
All right, real quick, offline we talked about this and I said you were going to be shocked.
Yes.
I want yes. a quick guess who it might be.
I think earlier you alluded to Dragunov. You alluded to Dragunov. And I know how much Russian pride you have, so I'm going to go. My guess is going to be Dragunov. Okay.
It's not Dragunov.
Who is
My pick for watch is Abaddon.
Stop. No, stop.
Yes.
Stop.
That's who I'm going with. And I'm going to tell you what my
Abaddon.
Thoughts were. I'm going to tell you what my thoughts were.
Okay.
I was also thinking Bronson Reed, because I think he's going to blow up.
Okay. I'll give you both, male and female. I'll give you both. Since you mentioned both of them, Bronson Reed and Abaddon, I'll give you both.
Now, here's the thing with Abaddon. I looked at it like this. Who's more ripe for the picking? And I know you like your girl Sheeta, but I feel like the AEW women's division is ripe for the picking. Also, Abaddon, like, I'm real live scared of Abaddon. Like, she plays that shit. Like, you look at her and you're like, ooh, gross. Like, you know what I'm saying? And you're, like, scared. Like, and they're pushing her. Like, she was there, and she was kind of like a jobber, if you remember. Like, she wasn't.
I remember.
You know, and now, look, she's Sheeta's biggest threat pretty much. Like, that's how they're playing it up. Because Sheeta's, like, scared of her, and she's never been scared of anyone. Shit, I'm scared of Abaddon. And, like, she just plays it so well. Like, she was supposed to be, like, remember when she first came in, I was like, they have this woman who's supposed to be, like, dead, but then wrestles, like, what? And that's Abaddon. But, like, Abaddon came back with a vengeance. And now, like, getting that push against Sheeta, getting that big push, and then I think having a weak women's division, I think Abaddon could be in a position to shine. I mean, it's like,
and,
you know, I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, this is not big into what I'm into, but I'm just like, I feel like she just does it so well and she's getting a good push at the right time. And I think Abaddon is who I'll go with.
And you've mentioned the other one on the men's side, Bronson Reed.
Yeah.
So I'll get to Abaddon. I may need more time for this. I'm just going to leave it at this, and we'll discuss this next week. I just think that whatever Abaddon does, Su Yung does better at Impact Wrestling, the Bride of the Undead. I love that whole gimmick with James Mitchell. Everything you're talking about, it's like I've seen it before. Su Yung did it better, and Su Yung's better in the ring. You're right. I am shocked that you picked Abaddon as someone to look out for. On the women's side, I think someone to look out for, I think next year is going to be the year of LeRae. I think Candice LeRae, she reminds me of Dolph Ziggler, the way she takes bumps, the way she sells bumps. You saw that bump she took on from your boy Bronson in that ladder match, that bump she took at War Games. She's a really good, solid wrestler. I feel like she's been kind of lost in the shuffle. I think they finally found the way, pun intended, to put her in that main event status in NXT. That's on the women's side. I think that's one to watch out for. Again, she just a lot of her style reminds me so much of Dolph Ziggler. I mean, I'm a Dolph Ziggler fan, so I'm saying that as a compliment. I think on the men's side, Ego Ethan Page is a free agent.
Be a runner up for me on the men's side. Have to add
Big
that.
E?
Yep.
I think
that's going to get a big push and is getting a good push at the right time.
On the men's side, I'm going with Ethan Ego Page. Burping. Those are the ciders kicking in. excuse me. Yeah. I'm going with Ethan Ego Page. His contract's up at Impact. I think that when he lands either in AEW or WWE, this guy's going to be a star. He is great on the mic. His promo that he threw at Bound for Glory before their tag team title match was one of the best promos I've seen in a pay-per-view in a long time. He's great on the mic. He has that look that WWE looks for. Part of me hopes he ends up, though, in AEW. I feel like AEW is better. Ideally, I'd like to see him and Josh Alexander go together as the North. I've already said how I think it's one of the best tag teams no one's really talking about. But Ethan Page on his own is a star in the making. And he put him in NXT, he's going to fucking shine. Put him in AEW, he's going to shine. Vince will fuck it up. So don't put him on the main roster. But I think Ethan Page is one to watch out for. Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with Ethan Page. Oh, and Deonna Purrazzo. I think she's going to do bigger things with that women's division and Impact as the year wears on next year. And if there's a relationship between AEW and Impact, listen, Purrazzo versus Sheeta, that's match of the year potential right there. That's match of the year potential. And I know you have your issues with Sheeta. You know, sometimes they're only as good as your dance partner. And I know this is, I like Penelope Ford, but Penelope Ford shouldn't be in the ring with Sheeta. Sheeta's just clearly head and shoulders better. But yeah, I'm going with Ethan Page, and I'm going with Candice LeRae with my honorable mention, Deonna Purrazzo. So, all right, man, we did it. We're out of this miserable year. Headed into 2021, hopefully by middle to late next year, we'll be going to shows again. I still have tickets for AEW that I'm either owed money or owed a show at the Prudential. I know I know you want to go to Mania again someday, so.
Yeah.
But any last thoughts as we close down, last 20 seconds?
Happy New Year. I don't know. I'm not a big New Year person. And 2020, outside the obvious, actually wasn't that bad a year for me. But I'm definitely looking to 2021 better and wish everybody Happy New Year.
And on that note, we'll head out. RIP MF Doom, RIP Brody Lee. Here's to a better 2021. All right, man, we'll do this again next week. Peace.
Late.
Done.
Oh, that's
great.
You can hear me fine. The nose reduction is great because I heard a minimum. You like barely hear it. Now, I don't know if the mic catches that stuff, but I don't think it does. I think that's what that button on the side is for, is the outside noise, even on the mic.
On the podcast?
Yeah.
Maybe.
So we'll find out. We'll find out. I didn't mean to be rude when I was snapping because I could hear you. I know. Melina's. Goddamn Melina. I mentioned part of the show.
I heard my
name. I'm Abaddon.
Really?
Abaddon.
That's how you know he doesn't want.
That's it.
Right?
This motherfucker, he is right, though, that the vision is right for the picking for somebody to step into that cheetah being so dominant. You know what I'm saying?
Nothing is with her.
I don't know. They really are. I do agree with them. They really are building up Abaddon. I'm just like, everything she does, I'm like,
instead of selling their talent,
they're selling self-image. She's not bad in the ring, but again, I see her calling in the ring, I'm like, oh, cool, here you see young too. Yeah. I was watching Reed, he had his, someone I want to talk over. I had Kerry and I do mean it. She reminds me a lot. Phone machine. and phone.